タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting with Carlos Correa, who designs for Vogue Patterns. Carlos shares his amazing career path, his passion for high fashion, and creating special details in home sewing patterns. We also get a peek behind the curtain and hear how Vogue sewing patterns get made.
Everybody, Vogue!
Woo! Vogue, 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 Vogue. This episode is brought to you by Bad Anna's Yarn Store. Is there a knitter in your life that deserves some pampering? Or maybe you're the fiber artist that could use a gift catered specifically to your love of yarn.
Bad Anna's Yarn Store has just launched their third annual 12 Days of Knitmas Advent Calendar. It's unlike any other, with 12 hand-wrapped gifts of notions, mini kits, and two full skeins of yarn. This Advent Calendar is available online at badannas.store and ships worldwide. That's B-A-A-A-D Anna's.store. And now on to the show. Hello, Carlos. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hello, ladies. It's nice to be here with you.
We are so excited to get a chance to speak with you today. And we were hoping that you could start us off by introducing yourself to our listeners.
Absolutely. So my name is Carlos Correa. I'm the Vogue Patterns designer. I'm a longtime designer. I've been with the company for over 20 years. I grew up in Puerto Rico. I learned sewing very young. My mother and my four sisters, they were all dressmakers, made all of their clothes, and I grew up with it. So, going to pattern stores, going fabric shopping, all of that was in my childhood for as long as I can remember. Now, initially, my thinking wasn't to become a pattern designer or a designer at all. But at some point when I became a teenager, I got interested in clothing and fashion. The clothes that I liked didn't exist in the stores, or they were too expensive. I was really attracted to the high-end, high fashion sort of things. And so I realized that I could make my own. I asked my mother, would you let me, play with the sewing machine? Initially, she said, absolutely not. You're not breaking my machine. You're not going anywhere near it. In fact, she forbid it. But I kind of snuck around in her sewing room, and I started pulling boxes of patterns and looking at the guide sheets and looking at the various pattern pieces. And, when my mother wasn't looking, I would look to her scraps of fabric, and I would cut things out and make things. And the next thing you know, I was really into it. I enjoyed just the process, the sewing, the patterns, everything. And my mother finally acquiesced. She saw that I liked it. And she would take me to the fabric store and buy me patterns and fabrics. And at that time, I didn't know Vogue Patterns existed. So I actually learned to sew with McCall's and Simplicity patterns. I made pants and shorts and shirts and just loved it. Eventually I became aware of fashion designing as a profession. And I applied to FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. And I was lucky enough that I got accepted. I will say my sewing training kind of really came in handy, because when I had to submit a portfolio and examples of my clothes that I had made, I had already been making clothes for some time, so I was able to come up with really well-accomplished sewing samples, and I think that may have been a factor in getting me accepted. Also, I was a really gifted sketcher. I was really, really into this drawing and drawing clothes specifically. So that's how I got into FIT. And I got graduated from FIT and started to work almost immediately after graduation. And the rest is history. Here I am. all these years later, you know.
It sounds like you were a dream candidate for FIT. I'm sure they were just drooling over all of your sketches and your work so far, having had so much experience with sewing. It's amazing. Oh,
thank you very much. I mean, I like to think, you know, it was very lucky that I got in because, as a matter of fact, I was so naive, I didn't even think of applying to any other school. So
we're like, this is it.
I think it was sort of like fate. That sort of like was guiding me at that time because I was doing all these things without really thinking. It was just a lucky sequence of events, but everything luckily worked out really well. And I loved FIT. It was great.
So was your move to New York and to go to FIT, was that from Puerto Rico?
Correct. I was 18 years old. I finished high school. I told my mother that I was moving. that I was going to school here. She actually had no idea that I was doing any of it. I don't know what I was thinking by not telling her that, but I was just sort of like, maybe in my head I was just thinking maybe it wasn't going to be happening after all. And I would have to have some plan B, but no, when I finally got the acceptance letter, that's when I told my mom, and she was like, well, okay, we need to get money for your plane ticket and so on. But she was really cool. She was very supportive. She called a relative of hers so that I could stay with this relative for a couple of months before I moved into the school. So it was a nice transition from home to New York. And to be honest, at that time, at 18, I was, again, naive and fearless. So I thought nothing of moving here and, you know, doing all of that. It didn't really hit me until a couple of weeks after I arrived in school that it was going to be a little bit different than what I had expected, in good ways and bad ways.
Yeah, I mean, that is so incredible. Tell us more about that time at the beginning when you first moved to New York. You're in a new city, you're going to FIT, you're kind of following your dreams. It sounds like it really was fate for you to get in there. But that time when you were in school, was that kind of a period of discovering your design style as well? Do you feel like you evolved at all while you were in school?
That time when I was in school was incredibly exciting, a little scary, but I was surrounded by like-minded people. You know, there were many designers, obviously, menswear, womenswear, children's wear. So it was a very creative community of people. I found it incredibly inspiring to be there. The things that intimidated me initially were the people. Not in school, but outside of school, because I didn't realize how rude New Yorkers can be. you get used to it, but it was culture shock for sure. It was culture shock to be in a city that is so fast and so driven by success, and you know, you have to have a lot of like a tough skin. Because people often won't give you a chance or a break, and some people will try to actually break you. That was a bit shocking and a little bit discouraging initially. But again, because I was in an environment that was creative, and I had friends that were like me, you know, creative and looking for inspiration and trying to express themselves, all the negative stuff kind of like receded into the background. And I made a decision to just focus on getting ahead and, you know, focusing on my studies and just enjoying the moment, because it was a very privileged place to be, to have that opportunity to come to New York, to go to one of the best schools for fashion, to work with incredibly gifted, talented professors, and surrounded by so much talent in class. You know, everything that was negative kind of receded. And I just focus on the good ones, the good things. But yeah, I learned a lot. And of course, in New York, you have access to the best of everything, fashion-wise. So going to the stores, Bloomingdale's, Macy's, you know, seeing beautiful clothes that I had seen in magazines or on television, but seeing them in real life was incredibly exciting and incredibly inspiring. The people in my school dressed really, really interesting ways. You know, Puerto Rico can be a bit provincial when it comes to fashion. Like, you know, people don't want you to be too high fashion or too stylish. I mean, there's a certain a boundary that you can't cross. But in New York, there were no boundaries. You know, guys wore skirts, girls shaved their heads. You know, if people wore black every day and it wasn't a funeral. people took chances. You know, people would go through the fashion magazines and look at the latest everything, and they would want to wear it immediately. And because they knew how to make their own clothes, they could. So all that creativity and self-expression helped me on my journey to become a designer, because once you realize the only limits there are to your creativity are the ones you put in front of yourself. When you remove the limits, then, you know, anything is possible. So yeah, it helped me tremendously to be in that environment for 2 years.
And I'm curious if you had a vision during this time of exploration about what you wanted to do after you went to school, or what your compatriots at the school were planning to do. Was everyone wanting to have their own fashion line, or did you always have that idea in the back of your mind that, you know, sewing patterns were interesting to you, or had you kind of moved past that?
I moved past that. The sewing patterns thing went in a file in my head somewhere, and I just kind of focused on school studies. At the time, everybody wanted to be their own designer. Everybody wanted to have their own label. That was a dream for most of the people that were with me. I was not so sure about that for myself. I wanted to work for a big designer. I wanted to, like, learn from somebody else initially. Like, I don't know if it was a lack of ego or just being smart, but I reckon that if you went on out on your own so young and with no experience, the chances were, you know, pretty high that you would end up making, you know, tons of mistakes and maybe not even survive. So I thought it was smarter to, like, learn from somebody else. So my immediate focus after graduation was to find a job on 7th Avenue with a big designer, and so sort of build on what I learned from that designer, and then, you know, take it from there. So that was the plan all along. Patterns I wasn't even thinking about. But Vogue Patterns, in a very curious way, came into my life at college. For this particular tailoring class, we had to buy a pattern, and I went to one of the fabric stores in New York, and that's where I discovered Vogue Patterns, which I didn't know it existed. And I was amazed, because I opened that book, and I see every top designer was in it. Calvin, Donna, Jeffrey Bean, all the European designers, Saint Laurent and Givenchy and YSL. I was looking at that book and thinking, what is this? And why did how did I not know about this? You can buy designer patterns. And once I discovered that, I was super excited about Vogue. But again, going to work for them at that time didn't occur to me. I was still thinking that I was going to just finish my school studies and then go to 7th Avenue and get my bona fides from there, which is in fact what happened.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question. After you graduated, what did end up happening? Tell us about that time and kind of where you ended up working after school.
Well, right before I finished school, I had to take one last course. They called it your specialization, and that's what you chose to be, whether you were going to study evening wear or children's wear or whatever. And I was a bit of a contrarian. At that time, everybody wanted to be in either evening wear or like there was a class called Current Scene, which was very trendy clothing. And the one class that nobody wanted to take was tailor design, which was coats and suits. And I was intrigued by that because I've always loved tailoring. I've always loved men's tailoring specifically. So I ended up applying for that course, which, again, very few people wanted to even be in it. So I got in. My class was very small. The teacher was a French professor. It was really tough, but taught us how to make handmade tailored clothing and, you know, all of that good stuff. But anyways, as part of the finishing, as part of your graduation project, you had to make design one outfit and make it. And you got to have a critic. And my critic was Harvey Bernard. And he was so impressed with my work that he offered me a job before I even finished school.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was a really lucky break. Because while people around me were stressing about where they're going to find a job, I was so blessed that this great man who had a very successful company designing coats and suits, he saw some potential and he offered me a job. So immediately after graduation, I went to work for him on 7th Avenue. And it was an amazing break.
Yeah, that's incredible, especially after showing something that you've worked really hard on and having somebody critique it and then offer you a job is really a true stamp of approval. I'm sure that must have felt amazing.
It felt amazing and it was unexpected because the thing is, there was another student in my class who was designing a really beautiful coat. And we all thought she was A, going to get the Critics Award, which was the prize you got if you were the best in the class. And we all were sure that she was going to get a job with him. Her coat was this beautiful grand purple wool coat. And I chose to go with a gray, double-faced, sort of maxi-coat shape, very modern, super minimal in styling, but really I felt represented what I liked. And I'll never forget when he told me that he wanted me to come to work for him. I remember asking him, I could have sworn you were going to give that award to, the other student because her coat was so beautiful and so spectacular. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, well, the thing is, Carlos, that coat took 7 yards of fabric. There's no way you can make a coat like that. There's no way you can produce it. So he said that was a deciding factor for her not getting that award because part of the assignment was that you have to design something that he, as a manufacturer, felt had potential for commercial success. And I guess that's what put me over the edge. My coat had that. But yeah, I was over the moon happy. And this man was such a nice man, such a decent man. It was a very good opportunity. And I knew that I had to say yes and see how it went.
And was your work with him primarily focused on the design side of things, or were you also working in the production and sewing side of things as well?
It was mostly production. Basically, as an assistant designer, what I got to do primarily was draw flats. So I had to do a lot of flats at that time. I was pretty good. I had some good graphic art skills. So I was designing brochures. I was designing putting together presentation boards. Which is, if you don't know, when you have a new collection but you have no samples, you put a board together, you put sketches on it, and you tell the buyers, okay, so these are the clothes. We don't have clothes yet, but these sketches are to show you what those clothes will look like. So I did a lot of those. And I also worked with fabrics. Sometimes we would get boxes and boxes of fabric samples. And we all got together and went through them to pick the ones that we liked the best. Learned a lot about putting color stories together, fabric stories together, designing groups of merchandise by color, by pattern. It was an interesting education. It wasn't the most creative or high fashion, but it was good stuff to know, a good foundation to have.
Yeah.
If you've never worked in a corporate setting, that in itself is an adjustment,
Yeah, I'm sure. And it sounds like a lot of these skills would transfer over really well to sewing pattern design. And we really want to chat with you a bit about your design process and working for Vogue Patterns. But can you bridge that gap for us? How did you get from your first job after school to designing for Vogue Patterns?
So after I worked for Bernard Holzman at Harvey Bernard for about a year, I got a little bit, anxious or just wanted to move on because, eventually I wanted to be in high fashion. So I never forgot about that. And things happen very quickly when you're that young. I remember there was an opening at a company called Tahari, which at the time was doing very, very high-end looking women's dresses and sportswear. And I applied and I got that job. So I told Bernie, Mr. Holzman, that I was leaving, that I was going to take this other job. And he was like, okay. He wasn't very happy, but he understood. So I went from Harvey Bernard to Tahari. And then while at Tahari, a model that I knew from Harvey Bernard call me and say, Carlos, there's an opening for an assistant designer at Jeffrey Bean. Would you like me to put a word in for you? I know so-and-so. I can get you an interview. And even though I had just started working at Tahari, when she said that to me, and the way she said it to me was almost like, it wasn't a suggestion. It was like, you should do this. So I said, okay. Jeffrey Bean at the time was a very important American designer on 7th Avenue. His clothes were almost close to couture level in terms of quality. He was like a designer's designer, they used to call him. And so I said yes. So she gave me the name of the person to call. I contacted this person. I got the appointment. And it just happened very quickly, you know, from Harvey Bernard going to Tahari, then getting the interview with Jeffrey Bean, and then getting the job at Jeffrey Bean. It all happened within like less than a year. But that interview with Mr. Bean was really good. He loved my sketches. He was a very kind man, very, very sweet person. He said, when can you start? And basically, yeah, like I got that job and I went to work for Jeffrey Bean for a number of years. That experience doing couture clothing was extremely helpful because it did help me get the job at Vogue Patterns. You know, once I got all the couture training from Jeffrey Bean and learning about best fabrics in the world, the best techniques, working on fashion shows, seeing how fashion shows got put together, all of that sort of broadened my horizons. It was just an amazing time. I will say this. Once I went to that job with Jeffrey Bean, I did learn something about 7th Avenue that I didn't like. And it was that the pace is insane, first of all. But the thing about high fashion specifically that I found a little disenchanting is that when you're working at that level, the clientele is very small. And you spend 6 months designing this extremely creative, extraordinary clothes. But because the audience is so small, you really are kind of designing in a bubble. You know, it's an interesting thing. You think that that would be the best thing you could do. But after 3 years of designing basically, you know, very elaborate clothes that very few people got to wear, I got to thinking that that's really not what I wanted to do. Because in my view, clothes that don't get worn or clothes or fashion that doesn't make sense for people's real lives, it's really not what I wanted to do. So as much as I enjoyed all those beautiful designs, those beautiful clothes, I realized that I wanted to do something that was a little bit more universal. So I reckon that high fashion wasn't for me necessarily. So after 3 years there, I took a break to reassess. And that's when the opening at Vogue Patterns came up. Interestingly enough, I remember thinking to myself, I have forgotten about this whole industry. And I have forgotten that, in fact, when I was younger, I did for a while thought, wouldn't it be cool to work for a pattern company? You know, wouldn't it be cool to design for patterns? So that opportunity comes up at Vogue Patterns. And I contacted the design director. And I got the interview. And he was really impressed with my Vogue. He was really impressed with the fact that I had worked for Jeffrey Bean. So I think in a roundabout way, it all worked out because I think the fact that I had Jeffrey Bean experience is the reason he wanted to give me the job. But I think the fact that I also had the experience with the product and the knowledge of it also helped me get that job. And I will say that once I started working for Vogue, the head designer who gave me the job, who wanted me for the job, told me later that he really wanted to hire me, but his boss didn't want him to hire me because she felt that I wasn't going to stick around for longer than a year. And this was many years ago. But yeah, I almost didn't get the job because she didn't want me to. His boss didn't want him to hire me, but he insisted. And I came through for him. So here I am.
Yeah. So how long has it been now that you've been working with Vogue?
It's been over 20 years.
Wow. You showed her.
Well, yeah. but I got to tell you, it was a really great, great opportunity. And I loved it from day one. I mean, I knew the language they were speaking. I knew the product really well. And what I enjoyed the most was that these nifty little patterns that we put together were going out. And, you know, it was just the idea that you can make fashion accessible to as many people as possible. You know, it really made me very happy.
Yeah, it's a nice contrast to what you were saying before about making fashion for, you know, a small group of people versus making fashion for such a large group of people, even like a global community. And before the show, you mentioned as well that in the last 20 years, it shifted so much to online. And now there's just endless opportunities for us all to connect, which is amazing. It's one of the best things about working in the sewing industry, we think.
I agree. It's what's given me, I mean, I think it can give my career like an extra boost at some point. I would say at some point, maybe it seemed like there was a disconnect. You know, I wasn't seeing or wasn't hearing how things were doing, or it felt like I wasn't connected to the consumer very much. But that all changed with the internet. Now you're connected whether you want to or not. But I definitely am more of the, I want to be connected. I want to know what people are doing because, A, it gives me a reason to stay here and do what I do. But it also motivates me to just keep doing better and better, you know, not to disappoint the consumer out there.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so interesting what you do for Vogue Patterns now. And we're so excited to talk to you because we've never had the chance to kind of get a peek behind the curtain of Vogue Patterns and kind of hear about the process of what it's like to be a designer working for them. So we kind of want to talk about that a little bit. Can you tell us what being a pattern designer for Vogue entails? What kind of things do you do on a daily basis?
It's a very good question. What we do here is complex and it's multifaceted. It crosses over very many different areas of the company. It's not just sitting in front of a computer or sitting on your desk and making sketches all day long. I mean, that's part of it, but not the main part of it. What I do is I'm responsible for making sure that there are things to put in those envelopes. what that means is that, you know, you get together with the team that's, you know, there's a merchandising team and there are business people that you work with. And you come up with plans of what you want to put out. And then as a designer, you're there to give them a creative vision of what the consumer will want to get excited about. So I need to do a lot of research. I go online, I go to stores, I am constantly looking at what's happening in fashion, and you start gathering ideas, but not in a random way, in a random fashion. You sort of like make lists, you know, I want these ideas for spring, I want these ideas for fall, I want these ideas for summer, and you come up with these plans for each catalog, and the plan is, you know, how many designs. And you come up with a very large list of possibilities, of options, if you will, which then get edited down and down and down until you got something that looks like, you know, a good number of propositions for the consumer. And the editing process involves listening to the business people. Listening to the consumer is crucial. I cannot tell you how many times I'm on a blog or I'm on the internet and somebody will say, I wish there was a pattern for this and this and this. And, you know, you take note of it and you work on it and you develop that idea and it becomes a great success. So I think the consumer feedback is really important. For Vogue, it's a little bit different, I guess, in the sense that the consumer expects a very high level of design and quality. So that makes the challenge a little bit different because, you know, it's a very specific product. It's not supposed to be the easiest and it's not supposed to be the fastest to make. So, you know, you don't want to err on the side of too difficult, but you also don't want to make it so basic that she's not going to feel motivated to spend the extra money on a Vogue pattern. But basically, the whole idea of a Vogue pattern is that it will give you the ability or give you the opportunity to have access to the best fashion and the best designs there are at home. I feel like there's a lot of people who look at fashion magazines or look at the collections and see very exciting new clothes coming down the runways, and they appreciate the design. They could certainly find ways to make those clothes fit in their lives, but because of the issue of, oh, it's so expensive, or it's not even accessible to them because the clothes we can make in such small quantities that even if they could afford them, they couldn't buy them. So having given the opportunity to the consumer to have access to those designs and those looks in the form of a Vogue pattern, it's what makes Vogue special. Now, as I say, some people say, well, it's so difficult, and it is, but I feel like if you are a person who has a certain level of experience, and if you want to challenge yourself to make something a little bit more advanced or a little bit more specialized, then Vogue gives you that opportunity. And I think that's what makes the brand stand out.
It really does. I mean, we love Vogue patterns, and we love that they have a little bit more of a high fashion edge. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about kind of inspiration and how you choose those runway looks to kind of interpret into a Vogue pattern. Because we even noticed on your Instagram that you sometimes share those side-by-side images of a Vogue pattern and then a designer, and you do refer to them as sort of straight from the runway. So I'm curious what that process looks like. Like, how do you decide what runway looks to pick out?
Yeah. Well, I love fashion. I love designer clothes. I love shows. And basically what I like to think is that first I listen to all the consumer feedback we get online, and people will, you know, often be very, very kind and generous with their input. So you keep an ear open and try to, like, figure out which designers are trending, which looks are coveted. You know, like if celebrity X shows up on the red carpet wearing, you know, a striking new design, and there's a lot of buzz about it, and in our community, there's a lot of people talking about it and sharing the image, you know for sure that something like that would appeal to the consumer as a pattern. So things like that, you know, you have to be, you know, paying attention to. A lot of what drives fashion these days is celebrity, you know? So I spend a lot of time looking at, you know, red carpet photos, magazine spreads, paparazzi shots of, you know, celebrity X, what they wore, what's trending, you know, things like that give you a lot of inspiration and a lot of, you know, ideas what consumers will find interesting, you know, because that's basically what makes fashion happen these days is the celebrities and what they wear. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, we've said on the show before that more celebrities need to get into sewing, because I think if there were more sewing celebrities, then the sewing industry would also have a big boom, and people would be interested in making their own clothes.
Yeah, I feel like the thing, I mean, why sew today? There's so many reasons for wanting to sew, but I feel like the best things, reason I can give you is that it's something that you craft, and it gives you joy, it entertains you, and then at the end you end up with something you can actually put on your back and show people, and it enhances your life, it enhances the pleasure you take in life when you have something on that fits you, that's made meticulously and tailored to your specific likes. I mean, there's no other feeling in the world. And I mean, yeah, sure, you can maybe go to a store and buy something made that looks great and fits you really well. But what you won't get from that is the satisfaction of knowing that you did it, you know, and also the time, the enjoyment of putting it together, you know, that time spent working on it is something that you can't get off the rack.
This episode is brought to you by Bad Anna's Yarn Store. If you're a knitter or have one in your life, you should connect to Bad Anna's virtual local yarn store experience at badannas.com. That's BAAAD Anna's.com. If you don't already know Bad Anna's, they're a local yarn store in the heart of East Vancouver that's been building a global community through their virtual local yarn store.
Many lovers of sewing also dabble in knitting, crocheting, weaving, spinning, or felting. Fiber arts are a vehicle for creative expression, life balance, and provide another tool for creating a slow fashion movement that benefits our world.
Bad Anna's Yarn Store has been providing affordable, diverse, and eco-friendly yarn, knitting supplies, and classes for over 10 years, and has taken to building a broader community space online for diverse crafters, parents, artists, and non-conformist knitters through their virtual yarn store.
They also have an amazing yarn selection, bringing some of the most coveted indie yarns from around the world to their online store, such as Volmice, Hedgehog, Life in the Longgrass, Skein, as well as talented local dyers and designers from the Canadian West Coast, including farm-to-needle wool producers.
Their 12 Days of Knitmas Advent Calendar is a showcase of Canadian talent with 12 gifts hand-picked and wrapped by their staff that includes the work of local artisans and two full skeins of Bad Anna's current favorite Canadian yarn. What a great gift for the knitter in your life. Buy it now at badannas.store.
Guys, Bad Anna's is my local yarn store, and I'm so excited that you guys can all shop there too. Love to Sew listeners can get 10% off all yarn and fiber purchases from now until November 15th using the promo code YARNYCOMMUNITY at checkout. That's badannas.com, BAAAD Anna's.com, promo code YARNYCOMMUNITY. Woohoo!
And are you thinking about that a lot in your design process, thinking about the home sewer and interacting with your design and with the pattern? And I'm sure with fashion design versus sewing pattern design, there's probably some differences there because you have to think about how it's going to be constructed on home sewing equipment by a home sewer.
Absolutely. You know, that's a part that initially was a bit of a challenge because, you know, in ready-to-wear, you never think about those things. But being a sewer myself, I know what the challenges are, and I know what can make or break a successful project. So I think about that a lot. I mean, it could be something as simple as, you know, the cutting layout. You know, is that cutting layout unreasonable? Is it going to drive you crazy? You know, are you going to need like 10 feet of space to cut that skirt? You know, it starts with things like that, and you also have to think about, are these notions going to be readily available? Am I choosing a fabric that is so specific that if the person sees it and doesn't like it, they immediately will discard the design because of it? So, yeah, that's a huge factor. How the consumer is going to work with it, is she going to enjoy the process? That's very important because I think if you enjoy the process of putting the item together, it makes for a more successful project, and it gives you more enjoyment. You know, I would prefer that the person had a good time putting it together.
Yeah, and I'm also curious when in the design process you start thinking about the fabric element of it, because also home sewers have kind of limited access to different types of fabric. So what does that look like for you? Do you kind of design a pattern with a specific fabric in mind, or does that kind of come later?
Always, always, always think with the fabric in mind because, you know, fabric can be a very important factor in the success of a pattern. So if I design a dress that could only work in knits, but I, you know, tell the pattern maker it's going to be woven, that's a problem. So you have to know what the dress is. If this is going to be for wovens, you have to know. If it's going to be for soft wovens, you have to know these things. As you're designing it, because, you know, when you hand a pattern maker a sketch or drawing of something, you want that to be a well thought out, nicely edited package, so the pattern maker can get through it without any issues. In couture, you can give a pattern maker a sketch, and you can spend, you know, 4 weeks on one sketch. And we don't have that luxury here. So the more you know and the more you you think about those technical aspects of a design, the better it is for you in the long run because it makes things run more efficiently. And yeah, it's a huge part of what we do here, the technical part of it. It's why this job isn't for everybody.
Yeah. So what does that process look like from, you know, you're designing the pattern and you're sort of paring down and deciding what's going to go ahead into actually, you know, turning that into a sewing pattern, but how many people are involved in that process and what are the steps from design, you know, conceptualization to actually finishing the pattern and putting it out for sale?
Mm-hmm. It's actually a very tight group of people here. Most people think that this must be, a huge, you know, corporation with like loads and loads of layers of people, but it's actually a very tight group. So that helps in some ways because it helps you get from point A to point B quicker. But it is crucial that, you know, you communicate very efficiently. So when I'm presenting my new designs, I want to give them a very thorough and complete vision of what the new design is. You know, is it going to have buttons? How many? All of those things, you know, have to be worked out. Is it going to be a woven? Is it going to be a knit? So you start with that. And then when you move on to the next stage, which is pattern makers making patterns, again, you give them a very complete and edited package with all the technical information. If you have any references, you give the references, and then so on. You check your muslins, and you know you have samples dress made, and it's all like a big team effort. But again, because it's a small team, it's really crucial that communication is honest, is accurate. That's what makes it work. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And one thing that comes to mind for me, as a pattern designer myself, I have, you know, my own little mini process. But there is a lot of back and forth, you know, after you make a sample, you might tweak something, go back and sew it again and continue to tweak it until it's perfect. And I'm wondering if there's ever time in that process where they come back to the design phase and you change elements in the design, or is it pretty much set from the time that you have decided, you know, like you said, are there buttons and how many? Does that ever change later on in the process?
It does from time to time. You know, we know what can happen sometimes. What happens sometimes is maybe an error will be made. Somebody will make a mistake. Maybe the pattern maker read the sketch the wrong way. Oh, I wasn't paying too much attention to whatever she was doing, and something happens anyways. It was unexpected, and sometimes that unexpected thing is exactly what you fall in love with. So that happens from time to time. I try not to be too rigid, and I try not to be too tight. You know, sometimes it is possible that you will go on the floor and you will see exactly what you wanted, and you're thrilled, but. Mm-hmm. Very often you go there and you find a close approximation and then you have to start tweaking and tweaking and tweaking until you get it where you want it to be. And then again, sometimes you go there and you find something that's not even close, but it happens to work even better than what you had in mind. So yeah, there's opportunities for tweaking and for changing along the way within reason.
Yeah, of course. Well, I imagine you guys are on pretty tight deadlines, putting out so many catalogs and patterns every year. So tell us a bit about what that's like to work under a deadline, doing all of the things that you're talking about.
It can be exhausting. It can be stressful. But if you have good organizational skills, and again, if you communicate and if you handle things efficiently with the teams, you get through it. It's a matter of getting used to like looking at your calendar, you know, keeping up with the deadlines, various deadlines, you know, just keeping track of, you know, did I get this? Did I not get it? You know, why is this missing? But yeah, it's crucial that you stay on schedule. That's just non-negotiable. but you get it done. I mean, again, it's the teamwork that makes it happen, and only with honest communication do you get it done.
And after 20 years of doing it, does it feel like old hat for you? Are you completely comfortable in that process? Or are there still moments where you're like, oh dear, like we need to get this done and it's going off the rails?
You can't get too comfortable. You can't get too complacent. So to me, that's what makes it exciting. And to this day, I still feel like, you know, I'm constantly learning. I'm constantly pushing myself, you know, to keep going. You know, again, I think it's a mistake to get too complacent or too comfortable. And luckily for me, that's never been the case. It's an ever-changing job. You know, fashion changes and you have to change too.
And what's your favorite kind of phase in the process of getting a pattern released?
To me, definitely the research, it's what I like the most. I like going through all the ideas that I put together, reading on the blogs, reading online, seeing the reviews, seeing what's sold, and sort of like trying to create a story based on all that data that makes sense, but that also feels like it's a story you haven't told yet. Because I feel like in fashion, what you're doing is you're telling stories, you know, at the end of the day. And, you know, so what story do you want to tell this season? So that research is what's interesting to me. The pattern making part of it is really interesting as well. You know, seeing people's interpretations of your ideas is always interesting. But yeah, the research part of it is what's exciting to me. I mean, once the clothes are made and once the clothes have been photographed, you're so far removed, you know, from it that it feels like it's all news. And it's ironic because you spend 6 months working on something, and then when the stuff finally comes out, you're like, oh, I'm so tired of that thing. Meanwhile, you people haven't even seen them because they haven't gone on sale yet. But yeah, it's the early stages of the process that get me excited.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that is your wheelhouse, right? You're the one coming up with the ideas and the design, which I'm sure is really exciting. And I can imagine seeing all your designs come to fruition in the final samples and photo shoots and everything is probably also very exciting.
It is. But again, by the time that happens, I'm already like two collections later. So it feels like it's old news. It's an old story. It's a book that I've read several times and I know from memory. So I'm ready to let it go, though. But I will say this, once the designs hit the market and people start talking about them, then it's exciting. This my second favorite thing is seeing people's reactions, good and bad. That's all you want. You want to get a reaction. You want people to talk about it. And when I see that happen, I get very happy. Like, we just put out a new collection, Winter Holiday. It's been out for, like, what, 10 days? And that's exciting because that's real people in real time, you know, interacting with the product. And it's just great.
Yeah. And what is the story behind the Winter Holiday collection this year?
So I was thinking that even though we all love casual wear, we all like to dress really casual, I kept thinking about, you know, if I had a party to go to during the holidays, if I had a little event to attend, if there's women out there who want to, you know, look special and make something, you know, that will wow the people at whatever event or whatever occasion they have to go to that time of the year, what would they want to wear? So a lot of what we did for that issue was, you know, festive and pretty and sort of like just dress up looks. I think we cover a variety of body types and shapes. So anything, everything isn't super this or super that. But the main goal was to give a more dressed up look, you know, to the consumer and give them options to make themselves, you know, look a little bit more pulled together.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of sequins, which I absolutely adore, and jumpsuits. I mean, I'm here for it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and, you know, rich colors and, you know, a little bit of glitter, a little bit of all that stuff. Because, again, you may not wear that all the time, but once in a while, if you made a beautiful sequin dress, whether you make it maxi or short is your choice. But if you made a pretty sequin dress in a stretchy fabric, you put it on, it's not uncomfortable, it's not tight, it doesn't pull, it's just liquid. And you go to the event and you get your glass of wine or your cocktail. And, you know, you look better than anybody at the party and, you know, you'll have a good time.
You're really painting a picture. I love it.
Yeah. And you made your outfit, so you have the extra boost of confidence.
Absolutely. And if you like it so much, you can make it again in something not sequined. Then you have two dresses.
So what trends are inspiring you right now? And are you able to give us like a little sneak peek into any like upcoming patterns that are coming out or the styles that Vogue is going to focus on in 2020?
In very general terms, I could tell you that the goal for Vogue is to be as high fashion and as special as possible. So I will be looking for more of that in 2020. You know, we really want the brand to stand apart. We want the brand to like have something unique to say to the consumer, because I think in the end, there's just so many different options for her. There's no point in me having something that somebody else already has. So for Vogue, that would be, you know, more high fashion, more runway inspired looks, you know, more of that, you know, giving her access to the best of the best.
And looking back on 2019, do you have a favorite pattern design of yours or maybe a favorite pattern design of all time, even if you can think of one?
Yeah, I mean, there was this one dress that we did a couple of years ago that it was extremely popular at the beginning and it continues to be. It was V9253. It was a plunging neck kimono sleeve dress with this beautiful little like tie that came from the back and tied on at the front. It was a maxi shape. And that dress has been incredibly popular. It's one of my favorites for sure. People have made it in so many different ways. And it's a very easy Vogue pattern. So it's not difficult to make, which is kind of ironic when you think about it. Very easy Vogue. But yeah, that's one of my favorites for sure. 9253.
We have seen that a lot in the community. I have that pattern myself and I haven't found the perfect fabric yet, but it is stunning. I mean, it just looks so glamorous, also comfortable. What more could you want?
Yeah, and it works in every possible fabric there is. I mean, somebody made it in sheer fabric even.
Wow.
Which kind of blew my mind because you could see right through it. But yeah, it's super versatile. It was a surprise that it did so well because that neckline is quite deep. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't been an issue. I mean, some people choose to like close it up a little bit.
Yeah. I've seen that, or wear a little camisole under it or something like that. You know, you can do what you would like with it. Yeah, it's beautiful. Very cool.
Thank you.
So to wrap up our conversation about kind of pattern design and the sewing world, I'm curious in the 20 plus years that you've been working with Vogue and designing patterns, what are some ways that you've seen the sewing world evolve over this time? I know we kind of touched on social media and that connection side, but have you seen any other
shifts
in the sewing community over the years?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the PDF pattern phenomenon, that's incredibly exciting and new. The fact that there are so many independent labels out there is very exciting. It kind of shows me that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who want to sew. They just need, you know, more options. So that's exciting. I mean, when I first came to the industry, it was Vogue, Butterick, McCall's, and Simplicity, and that was it. So, and some of the European pattern books. But yeah, the immense amount of indies, the PDF patterns, all of that stuff, it's super exciting. You know, it gives me hope for the future because, you know, if those didn't exist, if it was just the four of us, we'd be like, oh, okay, you know, we need more.
Yeah, we agree. It's so exciting to see the shifts that are happening, and we feel like there are more people discovering sewing every day and that there are different pattern companies for different things. And I think Vogue Patterns is perfect, like you said, for those special moments. If you want to dress more like the runway trends or you want to tackle something more challenging, we're always trying to encourage our listeners to get out of their comfort zone and try something that's a little bit more couture, something that's a little bit more difficult, but that it will pay off in the long run because they're going to learn so much from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's this place for fast sewing, there's a place for slow sewing. I mean, the point is you have options. You should.
I also want to hear a little bit about your own sewing and if you are also sewing your own clothes and kind of what that looks like for you.
Yeah, I definitely make my own clothes. I'm a slow sewer. I'm not a fast sewer. But on Instagram, I have an account where I, aside from posting things that we do here. I post my own outfits that I've made. I've made this shirt pattern, V9220, like 5 times. I've made it in so many different ways that are not even on the pattern. Like, I've hacked it to make it into other things. But I do love making shirts. I love making jackets. And for me, it's about getting inspired by something that I can't find in the store. Like, I wouldn't make just a basic shirt, which is why I've taken this pattern. I'm kind of twisted it every which way. But I want to have, if it doesn't exist in a store, then I want to make it. So that's the primary motivation. I'll make these things. And I'm a slow sewer, and I enjoy, you know, basting things by hand, you know, cutting things one single layer of fabric at a time so everything matches. That's what I enjoy. I enjoy hand sewing, you know, those like time-consuming techniques, because to me, if I'm in rushing, I'll spend 4 weeks on a shirt, but I'll be so happy with the end result that it's worth it. You know, and I do it in installments. I only sew like for a couple of hours at a time. That helps.
Yeah, that's great to hear. All our listeners are always trying to find time to sew and are sometimes hard on themselves for taking a long time to make something. But it sounds like you are really embracing all of those nice details and taking time with your fabric and with your project to really feel the love and enjoy the experience, which is a huge part of sewing.
Yeah, well, you know, my dressmaking manager here who gave me the best piece of advice is, of course, you don't have to get sew for 1 hour a day. And you know, you'll get there.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But, you know, but no pressure, no rush. It's just do it whenever you can. Do 1 hour to 2 hours, but enjoy the process.
We tell our listeners, do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, even if that, but it's you build up on that. And before you know it, I mean, again, it's about enjoying the trip, the journey.
Yeah.
I feel like if you put too much pressure of, oh, I've got to finish it, in this many hours, it's self-defeating.
We also were wondering about your fabric stash, because living in New York, you know, you mentioned you have access to all these amazing fabrics, and I'm sure you see tons of fabrics at work. So do you have your own personal collection at home, or are you raiding the Vogue collection at work?
I have a very, I'm pretty good about not accumulating a lot of fabrics. And I try to, if I buy a fabric, I have very specific purposes for each one of those fabrics. So I tend to go through them, you know, and I use them. So I don't have a big stash. I have a very, very modest little number of fabrics that I have yet to cut through. But normally the process for me is I get the idea, I get a pattern that I want to work with, and then I go get the fabric. And I just get to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it may not be the immediately, but I'll get to it. And I try not to buy any more fabric until I have gone through the ones that I had already, you know, put aside.
Oh, Carlos, it's so reasonable.
I know. I was made that way.
So much sense when you say it.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's hard because there's so many different fabric stores here. And yeah, you could go. A little crazy. We do have fabric sales from time to time, and I always say to myself, you know, I'd rather let that go to somebody else who would love it more than I will. So I'm very generous like that.
Oh, well, I also wanted to encourage our listeners to go check out your Instagram account. You recently posted a really cool picture of a shirt that you made with this awesome piece that sort of wraps around the back. And it's just so high fashion and so cool. And I wonder, do you often kind of incorporate those more high fashion elements into your own personal wardrobe? Like, what is your kind of personal style?
Absolutely. I mean, personal style is classic with a twist. So a shirt like that, you know, the idea was that, you know, that was an original idea that I just thought of, what would it look like if I had a scarf that was built into the shirt? And I know about pattern making, and I can draft my own pattern. So I took a basic shirt and I drafted this panel, you know, that went over and became a scarf and it drifts to the back and what have you. And, you know, I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to do. I did a very, you know, fast little, like, muslin of it, and it worked. But I do love those special pieces, you know, to supplement the more classic things that I have. And you know, that's why I sew. You know, and actually, that's really the reason why I learned to sew to begin with. As a teenager, I liked designer clothes. I like looking at GQ magazine for men and seeing all those amazing clothes and thinking, well, I mean, my mom sews, I can sew. And that's really how I got started. And all these years later, it still motivates me.
It's been so wonderful hearing all about your journey. And we're so happy that we got a chance to talk with you today.
Thank you very much.
Tell our listeners where they can find you online.
Well, there's on Instagram is Carlos Vogue Patterns and Facebook as well. And of course, there's a McCall Pattern Company Facebook page and Instagram page.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for chatting with us. It was amazing to hear about your whole story and how, you know, you just came full circle with designing, and we just loved hearing about your journey. So thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Bad Anna's Yarn Store. Bad Anna's Yarn Store provides quality yarn and fiber art supplies and ships worldwide with a focus on strengthening the accessibility of fiber arts in all communities through collective action. They have free shipping for all orders over $200.
Love to Sew listeners can get 10% off all yarn and fiber purchases from now until November 15th using promo code YARNINGCOMMUNITY at checkout. Go to badannas.com or find them on Instagram at badannas with 3 A's in bad. Like bad to learn more.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helensclosset.ca.
We're recording today in rainy Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're loving the show and want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thanks to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Natasha's really good at voguing.
Box.
She does the like
big fish, little fish, cardboard box. Big fish, little fish, cardboard box.
Is that it?
Big fish, little fish, cardboard box.
Oh my god, that's so smart. Big fish, little fish, cardboard box. Big fish. Is that good?
Kind of looks like you're packaging up things. Like a Christmas elf.
I'm packaging up my heart.
Clack, 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 clack.